Hi, this is Owen Duffy from the North Carolina Tar Heels, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, Johns Hopkins Blue Jay buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, there are seven games featuring top 20 teams in action this weekend. There's lots of midweek games to recap. And we sit down with one of the young stars of the game, last year's ACC Freshman of the Year, from North Carolina, Owen Duffy, as he and the number 9 ranked Tar Heels prepare for a big non-conference road game Saturday in Baltimore versus the 3rd ranked Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. And a meaningful game for both the Dixon family and the Flynn family on Homewood Field. So Dixie, let's get it. Dix, this weekend, the action really heats up.
It does. Last weekend for me personally was exhausting. I was in Denver all week as we recorded on location. I got home Thursday night around 11, walked in the door. By the time I got situated, it was after midnight, went to bed, woke up 5 in the morning, flew to Raleigh-Durham, was able to relax a little bit for a few hours. Then we had UNC Stony Brook. And then afterwards went out to dinner with our son. And then up at 4 a.m. the next morning to catch a 7 a.m. flight back to Baltimore. And no problems. And just, you know, went home, changed, grabbed a few things, and went down and sat and sleep at Ridley Athletic Complex to watch Loyola take on Hopkins. So when I was able to get home after that game later in the evening, oh, man, it was good to be home. And then Sunday was relaxed day. And recharge the batteries day.
I bet a hot shower when you got home from Ridley Field probably felt pretty good.
Felt very good.
These are the things that lacrosse fans do to support this game that we love, Dix.
Lacrosse fans, lacrosse parents, and trust me, when I'm amongst the teams, whether it's Loyola or North Carolina, I'm Dad Mark Dixon. I ain't anything else. Ain't nobody looking to me for my opinion or. Anything. I just blend right in. We're organizing the tailgate this weekend, pregame for the North Carolina
team. Oh, wow. Nice.
At Hopkins.
You know, another great tailgating opportunity is May Madness. And we have a deal for lacrosse fans. Men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are heading back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017, Dix. From May 23rd to May 26th, there's nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be in Foxborough, Massachusetts, for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season. Action starts on Friday with the women's D1 semifinals and continues on Saturday, the men's D1 semis. One of the best days of the entire lacrosse season. And then championship action starts on Sunday with men's D2, D3, and women's D1 championship games. And it all culminates on Monday afternoon with the men's Division I final. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options using the code ILPOD at checkout. That's ILPOD at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to the championship weekend, so why not get $5 off? Let the NCAA know how awesome our D-Fly and Dixie listeners are by purchasing your tickets today using our promo code. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets, promo code ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets. It's fun to watch teams get better as the early part of the season goes on. And I'm always surprised, and I especially look toward seeing what the Ivy League teams do, because they start a couple weeks late. And we saw that in action this weekend for the first time. And I think there's a real advantage when teams have 2, sometimes 3 games before they play the Ivy Leagues. So as we look at these midweek game results, That's what I was looking at. There were a bunch of games on Tuesday and a couple on Wednesday, and I was looking at the big picture of how the Ivy League top 20 type teams are doing. We will talk about Harvard's upset. They got beat by Colgate. We'll talk about them when we get to the game previews. We'll also talk about Penn and their win midweek when we talk about game previews. But I want to talk about Yale. What is going on in New Haven? They got beat on Wednesday afternoon by a really, really good complete Army team, 14-3 in New Haven. This was a shocker. Maybe not that Army won, but by the final score, it was certainly stunning.
No question. When you look at this game and Army's body of work thus far, a win over UMass on the road, 16-9. Then they win at home last week against Rutgers, 9-3. You go into New Haven against a Yale team that a lot of question marks on the defensive end, but a team that can score a lot of goals, a lot of goals. And the Black Knights score two touchdowns and only allow a field goal, winning 14-3. So you look at Army. We've talked about it before in the previous weeks of the show. They're disappointed in what happened in 2024. I don't know who ordered the code red, but it seems like it had its intended effect because they've come out in 2025 really buttoned up, playing great lacrosse. Let's look at Yale. Three goals at home. Three goals. And I don't have any inside information. But this follows a disappointing season opening loss at Villanova, 13-11. But this is a team that has offensive power, headlined by two returning players from injury, Leo Johnson and Chris Lyons. These two guys also, before the season began, announced their intentions to play for the University of Maryland next year. Does that have an effect on the locker room? Has that had an effect on the chemistry? I don't know. But I do know that in previous iterations of this Ivy League transfer situation, I don't know if it was known amongst the entire team. I'm sure the coaches were aware of, like, your nephew, Mike G, went from Princeton to North Carolina. I don't think that was shared amongst his teammates or talked about amongst his teammates, let alone publicized by lacrosse outlets such as the one that we represent, Inside Lacrosse.
Yeah, I didn't know. We talked about that a lot at length last year. And when you'd asked Mike about it, he said it was hard for everybody. Everybody sort of had to figure it out. They tried to do it before the season started. But the one thing, and I'm only speaking for Princeton, I don't know what the other Ivy League situations were, but they wanted to keep it quiet and not public for sure. Because I remember him telling us, like, how hard can it be to prepare for a game when your teammates know that you might be playing for that team next year when you're game planning for it? And I don't know what that locker room is like.
Yeah, we don't have any
They
inside
have,
information.
they
This is
are.
speculation.
Sure. And Yale's famous for how good the culture around the lacrosse program is, but they gotta straighten things out. I will say this. The Army goalie has been lights out. Sean Byrne, goalie for Army, 12 saves in their first win, 16 saves against Yale. He was lights out on
It
Wednesday.
makes a difference, and when we should give credit where credit is due. Of course, as analysts, we're supposed to try to look for cracks, that kind of thing. I saw Yale play in the fall when they scrimmaged North Carolina at Salesiana in Delaware back in October, and that offense was they were humming, they were clicking. And so far, well, look, 11 goals on the road at Villanova, nothing to sneeze at. But then you saw Penn State. What, 15-5 over Villanova the weekend prior. And then only three goals at home. So this is a game to game, week to week. One week you're absolute you're hot garbage, and the next week you're back in the top 20. That's how fickle we can be in the lacrosse world. But when you look at the schedule that Yale has after the Army game today, Penn State on March 1st, then they welcome in Denver. Then they begin Ivy League play. It seems like it happens faster for the Ivies, but again, they start later. So they tend to have more midweek games, weekday games, than just weekends. They still do have some non-conference action on their schedule later in the year, Hofstra and Albany. But these are these next two games, Penn State, Denver, are huge in terms of building an out of conference resume for, if they don't win the Ivy League, to be selected to the NCAA tournament.
Big time. There are lots of opportunities out there, and there's plenty of them this weekend. So let's get into the game previews. Dixie, there are, as I said, there are seven games featuring top 20 teams match up against each other. I think like the most of, I remember maybe seven, maybe eight. There was one eight a couple of years ago, but that's a lot. The games this weekend are so good. We don't have time and will not talk about these matchups: Virginia, Ohio State, Towson, St. Joe, Colgate, Villanova, Lehigh, Richmond, Michigan, Duke, and Rutgers, Loyola, in a game that both of those teams are dying to win. We're going to skip over those games and just feature teams in the top 20. And it starts at another Ivy League school, Cornell, number four. They won their season opener. Number 12, Denver's coming into town. They've won their last two. This is the home opener for Cornell. These teams have met three other times. Cornell's won two of the three meetings. They lost last year 17 to 16 in Denver, in which the Pios erased a four-goal deficit with a 7-1 run to take control. And this is really going to be a good bellwether game for both of these teams.
It sure will. Cornell is a team that a lot of folks feel not only is the favorite in the Ivy, and let's be clear, especially when we talk about Yale and we talk about it's we're recording this thing on, February 19th. So we're I mean we're 3 weeks into the season and each team has a couple games under their belt, the Ivies included, and we're ready to throw dirt on people's graves. I think that's a little premature, and that's not my intention. By any stretch, trying to contextualize what we might be seeing. This Cornell team that is loaded on the attack, and you look at what they did against Lehigh, an 18-10 win to open the season. CJ Kearse, 5 goals, Michael Long, 7 points, 3 and 4. Ryan Goldstein, 1 and 3. They got Willem Firth, young player out of the Hill Academy, with 4 goals. So, this is a Cornell team that can score. So expect another high-octane game. With a Denver group that, after that opening season loss to Johns Hopkins, has put together a couple of really nice outings, the latest of which, trying to find it, the latest of which was a 10-8 victory against Utah. A team in the Utes have beaten Ohio State for their only victory of the season. But Cody Mahlowski, 5 goals, 2 assists. And then it's just balance. Mahlowski really was the only one with, a ton of points. And that is, has continued under Denver when Matt Brown was the head coach. I'm sorry, when Matt Brown was the offensive coordinator, now head coach, now Dave Metzbauer, offensive coordinator. There's no superstars on Denver. CJ Kearse is its Wharton favorite. You can't say that about the Pios, but this very well could be a matchup of championship weekend, of semifinal Saturday, or maybe even a national championship game. Denver Cornell, terrific one on tap.
Yeah, that one starts the weekend off. It's at 11 a.m. Fans can catch that on ESPN Plus. So start your afternoon buffet a little earlier with number 12 Denver at number four Cornell. Another game featuring an Ivy League team, number 17 Penn. They're now 1-1 after their win over Albany on Tuesday. Will take on the number 18th ranked Delaware Blue Hens. They're undefeated. The 2-0. This game will be at noon, and fans can catch this on Lacrosse TV.
Yes, the CAA has that contract with Lacrosse TV. Penn Quakers, I know we're not talking about Drexel, but let's stay in the Philadelphia area just for a second. Stephen Boyle, Hopkins grad, now the head coach of the Dragons. First career victory as the leading man up in Drexel, 12-10 over Lafayette this past weekend. Penn opened up their 2025 campaign, tough defensive battle with Georgetown, lost, what, 9-6? But then got some goal scoring going against the Albany Great Danes, who is always they're always a tough out. Scott Maher has one of the toughest teams in the country. But you look at the balance scoring, Chris Patterson 4 and 1, Ben Smith 3 goals, 2 assists, Griffin Skeen with a hat trick. So Penn getting some good scoring production. And that's great. If a team like Penn can hit double digits, most, if not every game, they're going to be tough because they have got arguably the best defenseman in the country and one of the best goaltenders in the nation. And then some other key players sprinkled in that also create a great defensive environment for the Quakers. So they're going to be taking on Delaware. They'll play a Delaware team that knocked off St. John's 17-10. And they were down to the Red Storm 5-2 in the first quarter and were able to pull it together and held St. John's to one goal in the second half. So good defensive effort. Brendan Powers led the way with six goals. And Kevin Ellington, Loyola High graduate, affectionately known as K9, wore the number nine in high school. I think wears a different number for the Blue Hens, but he's a terrific goaltender. And this will be a good game.
Yeah, reminder, this game is at noon. You can catch it on Lacrosse TV, number 17 Penn at number 18 Delaware. Our next game, of course, fans remember that it was the Hoyas that handed the Fighting Irish their only loss a year ago, upsetting top-ranked Notre Dame in South Bend 11-10 in overtime. And number one Notre Dame traveled to Georgetown to take on the 11th-ranked Hoyas at noon. Fans can catch this on Flow Sports. And if they can, and I am certain the Hoyas have Notre Dame's attention this season.
Wow.
One of the biggest games of the week on Flow
Look,
Sports.
I often will defend these productions. I know, especially early season, the camera angles and the replays and this and that get trashed, but at least you can see it, Flow Sports. I mean, it's just like, let's say you want to buy this game. Like you have to watch Georgetown Notre Dame, but you can't get there physically. So I'm just gonna, you know what? I'm just gonna bite the bullet and I'll pay the whatever for 1 month. Okay, cool. Then I've just heard so many horror stories about when you go to cancel, can't do it. Like it's awful. But I digress. Let's talk about Georgetown and Notre Dame. Georgetown rebounds from a tough loss to Hopkins with a quality win over Penn. They're built on defense, and they're going to need every ounce of that as Notre Dame comes to the nation's capital. Two-time defending national champion. They have been impressive in their first two games of the season, putting up big numbers, beating up on Marquette last weekend, 22-9. I mean, pick your poison with them offensively. I know they said goodbye to Eric Dobson and Pat Cavanaugh and some of the other key pieces, but man, they have just got, they're the champs until proven otherwise. And defensively, I think we need to mention, Sean Light has established himself as ready to take that next step to be one of the best defenders in the country. And this will be a good game, man. It'll be a good game. Better go get your tickets and go to DC because ain't nobody want to watch this on Flow Sports.
Well, you know what my big beef always is. And as I mentioned, there are
Here we go.
seven games featuring top 20 teams in action against each other, and they all start between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m.
There was a tweet about it. I retweeted it with, I was thinking, if I'm not mistaken, Christian Scarpello, he was a short stick D middie at Rutgers for a number of years. And I think he's the one that put the tweet out and got a lot of traction. Right when I saw it, I'm like, man, this guy, Scarpello must have a direct line to D fly.
We need to talk, Christian. We need to have a chat. Yeah, so let's skip. There are two great noon games. We'll get back to them. But I want to move to number 15, Harvard, at number 6, Syracuse. Both of these teams coming off of losses. Harvard's looking to bounce back from its midweek loss to Colgate, where they gave up 19 goals. In this series, Cuse is 18 and 0 all time against Harvard, but they haven't played in a long time. And Cuse is looking to rebound too. 1 p.m. You'll be able to see this game on ESPN Plus.
Let's start with Harvard and that loss. Not only were you at home and gave up 19 goals and took the L, but it was Matt Carwit leading the Raiders into Cambridge and beating his friend and former fellow assistant coach at Notre Dame, Jerry Byrne. So that one's got to sting. for the Crimson, but they get an opportunity to take on a Syracuse team that only scored 2 goals in the second half in College Park this past weekend, losing to Maryland 11-7. And the chirps have already started flying. The shade is out on Syracuse because they got fat on some nice wins, an impressive one against Towson by 11 goals the previous Monday. But I guess I don't mean to, I shouldn't laugh at this, but I guess, sometimes lacrosse fans put the Syracuse offense on a milk carton, have you seen me kind of thing. And I think heading into the Maryland Syracuse game, I think based on what we had seen, we figured Syracuse was going to win the game. Not dominate, but we felt like they were going to win the game. So now when you look at this one, you read the tea leaves. Harvard 19 goals, you give up to Colgate at home. Syracuse is going to be at home, coming off a loss, angry. Can they hang up 25, on Harvard? So and watch, it'll end up being a 10-8 game or something like that. So rebound opportunities for both of these ball clubs.
Got to give a shout out to my man, Grizzwack and Virus. They saw that Maryland was getting 3 goals at home, and they said, that seems like a lot. I'm putting my money on the Terps. So
So you okay,
Hopkins
you
guys
gotta
betting on the Terps
wait a
and
second.
winning
Okay.
because.
All right, wait a second. You just mentioned Virus and Grizzwack. It's not like, I mean, they're good guys, don't get me wrong, but it's not like they're household names. You can't just drop their names and then have our listeners try, oh yeah, sure, those guys. Come on, what's the matter with
Yeah,
you?
so Frank Grizzwack, Dr. Frank Grizzwack, Hopkins Hall of Famer, former basketball player, Brian Fields, known to most people as Virus, an attorney in New York, both class of 1994, Hopkins guys. They reach out to me, seeing that Maryland was an
Giving 3
unusual,
goals at home.
getting 3 goals at
Getting,
home,
I'm sorry, getting.
Syracuse 3 goal favorite, Maryland getting 3 goals. And they said, this looks fishy. And I'm not betting against John Tillman and the Terps in College Park.
Wow.
Good
I
call,
mean,
boys.
obviously, I know both Frank and Virus. They were in my class, graduated with. But man, shoot, that's a tough day where Hopkins dudes are have faith in the turtle.
I go where the money
Smart,
is.
smart money, smart
Scared,
money.
smart money. Scared money don't make money.
That's right.
There we go. Moving on. Number 20, Navy. Midshipmen are 3-0. Take on number 10 Penn State. Nittany Lions are sitting at 2-1. This game's at 1 p.m. You can catch it on the Big Ten Plus. This will be the 40th meeting all time in the series, but only the second time they've met since 2003. Penn State handled Navy 13-3 last year.
Navy, 3 straight games now, double digit scoring. Okay, they beat High Point on the road 14-10, John Crawley's first game. Second game, they beat Iona 22-9. Okay, first year program with all freshmen and redshirt freshmen. Towson, a preseason darling, even though they came into this game, what, 0-2? Close loss to Hopkins. And then they got, were competitive with Syracuse until late in the game. And like so many teams that go into the dome, they get dusted. And Towson jumped out in this game. I think it was 3-0, and Navy had to call an early timeout first quarter, settle things down, and then from there on, it was all Navy. So a ton of credit goes to Kenny Brochert, the new offensive coordinator down in Annapolis, and good scoring. I mean, William Goers, a freshman
Yeah.
who spent his plebe year, I guess. And I guess he's a plebe now, but he was in Naps last year, that prep year. 10 points, 6 goals, 4 assists to go along with, Henry Tolker, a consistent scorer. And I mean, I tell you right now, and I've known this player for a number of years, AJ Marsh. He is ready to break out, and he's a kind of defender that he can play anywhere on the field. So you can put him up at pole, you can put him on the wings on faceoffs. He can guard the other team's best middie. He can go down low, play close, and guard the best team's attackman. Basically, he's going to be on the best offensive player that the other team has to offer. And in this situation against Towson, it was Mikey Weisher. The Tigers moved him down to attack. to try to give them more punch. And Marsh was on for most of the game. And Weiser still got his, but Navy won the game. They're going to play a Penn State team coming off of a tough overtime loss to Princeton. What a great game that was. And it was indoors, Hullabaloo Hall. So advantage to the Nittany Lions. But not only did Princeton win, their goalie was outstanding. We'll talk about the Tigers later. But Penn State, Matt Traynor needs a little bit of help on the offensive end of the field. Defensively, they, if I think my eyes, and I watched a little bit of the game on replay, Nate Kiviri double donuts. But he still made plays. He still moved the ball and was involved in the overtime game winner. Ball initiated in his stick, and he got it off. But that Penn State defense did a nice job on Kiviri. But Burns and McAsee, lit him up. So, good rebound opportunity for Penn State. You have to know that Navy remembers that 10-goal loss from a year ago. Can they keep their momentum going against the Nittany Lions?
Once again, this game's at 1 o'clock. You catch it on Big Ten Plus. All right, Dixie, we've got two more games to go, both featuring top 10 matchups. Number 9, North Carolina, undefeated, comes to Homewood Field. Blue Jays are 4-0. This game is at noon. We'll catch it on ESPN Plus. Before we talk about this game, let's bring in our guest this week, sophomore Owen Duffy from the Tar Heels, to talk about this upcoming game and the start of the season down in Chapel Hill. Please welcome into the show North Carolina star attackman, sophomore Owen Duffy. Owen, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Oh, and great to be with you. Thanks for taking a couple minutes out of your day to chat with us. First things first, you had a terrific freshman season down in Chapel Hill, cut short by injury. And I believe that might be the first time that you've ever had a significant injury in your career where you missed an extended period of time. How did you treat that time? What did you learn from it? And what were some of the things that when you look back, you're like, okay, I don't want to be in this position again. So maybe I'll concentrate a little bit more on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think getting injured and missing a significant period of time, the way the coaches and people around me kind of talked to me about it was you can either feel sorry about yourself or look at this as an opportunity to, improve yourself in other aspects. And I think that was something that the coaches kind of preached to me was you're still part of this team and we still want you to help this team get better. And I think that was kind of huge from the coaches. Really, I kind of tried to stay involved as much as possible. And then once our season was cut short, kind of attacked the rehab as hard as I could.
With respect to now being a sophomore, what have you taken from your freshman season and now are applying it in your second go round in your sophomore season at North Carolina?
Yeah, I think the game has definitely slowed down a lot. And I think the group that we have now is such a talented group. And I think one thing that our coaches kind of preached, was leadership. And I think this year, our leaders, whether it's younger guys, older guys, I think everyone's kind of done a great job.
Let's rewind a little bit. You went to St. Anthony's High School, a place that just produces a ton of excellent lacrosse players. 2020, number one recruit coming in, Brennan O'Neill, St. Anthony's. 2021, Andrew McAdory, number one recruit, St. Anthony's. 2023, Owen Duffy, number one recruit, St. Anthony's. What's it like to play at a place like St. Anthony's? What makes it so special? And how do they continually pump out top-level talent?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you kind of touched on it, but the history of St. Anthony's speaks for itself. Our coach, my sophomore year, Coach Weiser, kind of preached to us that we were playing for the guys before us who lost their season because of COVID. And I think that kind of hit all of us. It really touched on us that we have to be grateful for what we have, and not everyone gets this opportunity. But I think, like you said, the talent at St. Anthony's speaks for itself, and you realize how lucky you are to be a part of a program like that.
Your father, Bill, played at Cornell. Good old Bill Duffy.
Also,
What has
St.
he been
Anthony.
able to share with you as a former player? Obviously, your dad and I are around the same vintage. It's been a minute since we played at the level that you guys are playing at now. But how helpful has it been to have your father, to kind of be an ear if you need a non-North Carolina perspective?
Both of my parents, honestly, have been a huge part of my success. a huge part of my life in general. I think, like you said, they're always there for me, always supportive no matter what. I kind of preach that they'll have my back no matter what I do. And I think that that's something that has really helped me throughout my career.
With both your mom and dad being athletes for the Big Red, how many Cornell stories did you have to hear when you were growing up as a kid? And was there any pressure on you at all to attend college in Ithaca, New York, instead of Chapel Hill, North Carolina?
Yeah, I definitely heard my fair share of stories about Ithaca. Both my parents loved their time there. They took my sister and I, who now plays at Virginia, up there for one summer, and we thought it was beautiful. But they did preach to us how, like you just alluded to, Ithaca in the summer is a lot different than Ithaca in the winter, and Chapel Hill in general. So I don't think they really put any pressure on me or my sister in that case. I think they told us that you'll know which place is right for you, and that's your decision to make.
Yeah, can't forget Christine Duffy also played at Cornell. She would be very upset if we didn't. And so good catch there, D Fly. You mentioned your sister, Maureen, senior captain at Virginia. I know it's a different sport in terms of, men's lacrosse to women's lacrosse, but still ACC student athletes. What has she been able to share with you about your journey so far and her experiences as a lacrosse player?
Like I said, with my parents, she's another one. She's always been there for me throughout my journey, whether it's the highs or the lows. And I think that's something that, I can't really put words to it, how much it means to me. But I think, seeing her be captain, and seeing her succeed, I mean, I'm her biggest fan, and seeing the success that she's been having in her journey is, it inspires me almost in a way. I think that her and I want each other to succeed no matter what it is.
Oh, when I watched the Carolina Tar Heels play this year, I was surprised at the amount of pressure you put on the ball when in riding situations and even in like a transition until it's in a settled situation. Like Dixie, we talked about it last week on this podcast. You've been doing that since you were in high school. How do you do that as a collective group? And is it part of every game plan going in, or is that just the way Carolina plays?
Yeah, that's something definitely that the coaching staff has kind of preached to us. We want to play fast, we want to run, and we have the guys to do it. I think, especially in the ride, it's not just one guy, it's a collective. And I think our whole team this year has really bought into playing fast and being aggressive on that ride and trying to get as many opportunities back as we can.
Oh, and a lot has been made about how having you and Dom Petromala, especially healthy, how strong your attack unit is. When you look at other aspects of the team, midfield, defense, goal, who are some of the names that fans need to know?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of all starts, I think, with Brady Wambach at the X. I think he's arguably one of the best faceoff guys in the country. And then I think you alluded to it, but in goal this year, Mike Gianfacaro has been lights out, and the guys in front of him. We're pretty young down there, but I think those guys and Coach Petromala have been playing at a really high level. And then I would say Spencer Wertheim, our transfer from Cornell this year, has really been a big part of our offense.
He didn't mention it in this conversation, Owen, but he's always talking about Mike G in other situations, and rightly so, right? How impressive has it been for Mike to come in as a fifth year grad transfer and you guys elect him captain, one of your captains?
Being a fifth year guy, he's seen it all. He's been on teams that have been very good, and he's kind of seen everything that you can in college lacrosse. And I think, like you touched on, him coming in and within one fall proving himself to the guys, being voted on by the team as a captain, kind of just I think speaks for itself. But definitely having that veteran leadership down there with that young defense that I talked about has been huge for us.
You guys go into Homewood Field this weekend to take on Johns Hopkins. You guys are in the top 10 in the Inside Lacrosse Kane media poll, and you face a Blue Jay team that is 4-0. And this is a big stage for you guys. Homewood Field, you guys will be on ESPN Plus, and they're sending their A team to cover this game. Anish Kark and Quint will be on hand. So this is a big deal. How are you guys approaching it? How has practice been so far this week? What's the mindset heading into Baltimore?
I think you already touched on it, but Homewood speaks for itself. I think the history, like you said, it's one of the best stadiums in college lacrosse. And Hopkins is a team who's always in the mix, or at least is a big name every year. But I think, I think we like the group of guys that we have, and I think that we want to just play our game, not really get bought into the hype too much.
He's focused. He's focused, Dan.
Well, it's certainly a big game this Saturday at noon, Homewood Field, top 10 matchup, Hopkins, North Carolina. Oh, and can I ask you a couple quick hitters before we go here?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Where's the best food in Chapel Hill?
Stony River.
What is your favorite stadium to catch any sport, any game?
Dorrance Field.
Good answer. Who's your favorite Tar Heel team to watch, any sport?
I would say in previous years, the basketball team.
Who's the best player of all time? Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, or LeBron James?
Michael Jordan.
Is that even a question?
Who is the best chef on the Tar Heels team?
I'm gonna have to give a shout out to my roommate, Adam Negrelli. He medically retired this year, but I'm gonna have to give it to him.
All right. When the Culver guys get together, are they insufferable?
At
Or are
times.
they fun to be around?
They can be at times.
What are you listening to in the UNC locker room these days?
It's a wide variety. It depends who's on aux.
Who's the best on aux?
Would have to go James Mattin.
Was the highlight of your high school career?
I would have to say any of the three Catholic League championships.
And where's the best place to eat in your hometown?
Hurricane Deli.
And with your sister at University of Virginia, I know you visited Charlottesville. You are in Chapel Hill as a student athlete at North Carolina, two incredible college towns. Which one's better?
I'm sorry, Maureen, but Chapel Hill.
There you go.
Hey, Owen, thank you for joining us on the Flying Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you and the Tar Heels this week and throughout the season.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
Dix, before we get to the last two previews, I want to make sure that we're thanking our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. To learn more, go to simplicitygroup.com. Good to talk to Owen this week. I didn't realize he was Owen Dixon's roommate.
One of
Both the O and D's living together. That's
them.
got to be very confusing for their friends, or you call like, is Owen there? Yeah, he's here. Oh, wrong one.
Well, first of all, you act like they have a landline,
That's true. Like the phone rings
so
in the one room in the kitchen, and someone has to come
you're
like, hey,
going back
Owen, it's
to
Rick. Oh, that's
your time
hilarious.
in the freshman dorms at Gildersleeve, Owen and Owen have been good buddies since, both high school competing against each other and on recruiting trips and that kind of thing. Share a house, pretty nice little house right off of Franklin Street with Al Levy and Adam Negrelli, who Owen Duffy referenced Negrelli as being the best cook, one of the best cooks. I think, was it on the team or in the freshman or in the sophomore
On the
class?
team, you said on the team.
On team, yeah,
Yeah.
Negrelli's no joke. Duffy is he's a competitor. And him being out last year was tough on him. It was tough on the team. And even with him missing those last handful of games, still had strong enough body of work to take home ACC Rookie of the Year. So that's pretty darn impressive. And they're off to a great start, 2-0 this year, coming to Baltimore, Homewood Field, to take on Johns Hopkins in a top 10 matchup. Carolina found a way to beat Stony Brook. The Seawolves goalie, 17 saves on Friday night at Dorrance Field, and he was spectacular. But Carolina kept their composure, kept their poise. We're a little top heavy in the scoring. Dom Petromala had five. I think Ty English had a hat trick out of the midfield. So a little bit more balanced scoring for Carolina could be in order. And then Johns Hopkins survived. They had to rally to beat Loyola in a game that the atmosphere at Ridley last Saturday was phenomenal. It was fantastic. It was loud. It was energetic. The play on the field was sloppy, but it was spirited and intense. And I watched the game from, I just went off by myself. It was sleeting. Weather sucked, and it was just surrounded by students, and they had no idea. Most of them had no idea what was going on. They're trying to explain the rules to one another, and they were from both schools, but man, they were so supportive and excited for the game. Like, just the guys making plays, and just the intensity, and all that stuff. So it was really cool just to kind of be around an audience that I'm not normally around, just seeing people truly enjoy a lacrosse game. But when you look at this matchup, Scott Smith on Owen Duffy, probably, or will it be Quentin Kilrain? Kilrain took Minicus, Matthew Minicus, but the best Dodger really for Loyola is Keenan Everhart, sophomore, and that's who Smith took. So we'll see if it's Kilrain, Petromala, Duffy, Smith on the other side. And then Chase Salucci, for North Carolina freshman, is an animal. ACC Defensive Player of the Week. I would imagine he's on Melendez, so that could be a terrific matchup. And then at the faceoff dot, you're going to have Logan Callahan, who actually struggled a little bit early against Loyola, and Brady Wambach. So there's subplots all over the field. Not to mention the biggest that I can see. You took yourself off mute. You can't help yourself. What do you got?
Oh, Dave Petromala and his sons are coming back to Homewood Field.
Well, so that's the so Dave has been here before as an assistant, Syracuse a couple years ago. So he's been back, but the added dynamic, you just hit it. Both his sons now on North Carolina, Dominic and Nicholas, and both of them, literally grew up, on Homewood Field, right?
There's a lot of storylines at play this Saturday, for sure. And it's going to be a really good one. It's, while you were talking about the games, I'm reminded that you saw each of these teams in action live last weekend. Well, I watched them from the comfort of my living room, watched both of these teams play, but I will be there at Homewood Field this
Oh, wait a
Saturday.
second. Wait,
Yeah,
so we
so.
release the doves? Do you have a security detail coming in, like, to get you,
When you
are you
hear
gonna
the
order
chopper, that is me landing on over a Garland
on the
field.
baseball field?
Yeah, on the baseball field.
Are you going to order extra, like, ahead of time, the chicken grillas from the they still sell those things,
Those were
remember?
my favorites, man. I
Man,
for totally
I
forgot
like
about
them as
those.
well. I shudder to think what was in them,
Oh my God. What was that place called? Was it the
was just
AMR
like a
Grill?
snack bar right off of
The snack
the
bar. I think
AMRs.
people called it the AMR snack bar.
Yeah. And before things, I guess, got dicey on campus, because I lived in Baker, which is right in that quad. And if you go through the double doors, that's where like the mail room was. People could
Mailroom.
put their bikes there. And then when you continued through, that was the snack bar, and then you went out the back door that led you right to the baseball field. Well, because things, I guess, got goofy, you can't walk that path anymore. There's security gates set up, and you have to, buzz yourself in or be buzzed in. And so I haven't been through that I haven't
You
been
gotta
through the snack
describe
bar quite some time.
what a chicken grill sandwich was.
I mean, basically, it was just like a grilled chicken sandwich, but I'm
With
sure it
lettuce,
wasn't.
like diced lettuce, a little bit of
We had
mayonnaise,
you can get it like
tomato.
it would almost be it is like a knockoff grilled chicken. So it's not even a chicken cutlet because it was never breaded, but it's just like a knockoff grilled chicken sub. And you can get I used to get it with lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise,
So good.
but I God knows what that chicken was made of.
And it was like $3.
Yeah,
It was cheap. It was
was it
three.
that cheap?
It was like 350, and you maybe got fries with it.
Yeah. That snack bar low key had some good food.
I just remember eating a lot of those things. I don't remember a lot of the other stuff that they had.
Oh, really? Okay.
But they'd have a TV. That was like you could watch cable TV in there and sit in there.
You're
And you
right. I
couldn't do
forgot
that in
about
other
that.
places.
Yeah, you're right.
I remember
Cable
talking.
TV was a premium back then, too.
Remember when the Oklahoma City bombing happened?
Yeah.
I remember standing in there and Coach Margraf was in there and he was talking to me about what we were watching on TV,
In the snack
watching
bar.
in the snack bar, watching
Wow.
Aftermath. And I'll never forget that. That's been like the one memory I have of that place between the chicken grillas and talking to Coach Margraf. All right, Dix. The biggest game of the weekend, a top five matchup featuring number two, Maryland. Very impressive. Great body of work. People say Hopkins has a great body of work this season. I think Maryland's might be stronger. We'll go up to Princeton, New Jersey to take on the fifth ranked Tigers. Got a win in their first game. This game is at noon. They're all at noon, it seems like. You can catch this on ESPN Plus. This is a quad box day. If you have the capability on your Apple TV or whatever device you use to get the quad box going, it's quad box noon on ESPN Plus.
Maryland has to be feeling really good about themselves, knocking off Syracuse. And now this is a replay. So this Maryland and Princeton rival, it's turned into a rivalry. They played twice last year, right?
Yeah. The beginning of the
Maryland won, or
season?
Princeton won the first game,
No,
right?
Princeton lost the first game, maybe like a couple, they played two teams and then went down for their first big weekend game. Lost 13-7 to
Okay.
start the season and then closed out the year in the NCAAs, losing 16-8 in
Okay,
May. And
okay.
I was there at both of those games. The weather was better in February than it was in May for that NCAA game, which was
I remember
crazy,
that
man.
first round NCAA tournament game because that was the last game of the day. And whenever you get those 7:30 windows on the Saturday and well, not necessarily the Sunday, because Syracuse always likes to have that Sunday 7:30 game because of their graduation that weekend. But that Saturday night 7:30 game is always that's the game that are, the network and everybody's like, this is the best game. And Maryland, I remember a lot of folks were down on Maryland because they had just gotten drubbed in the Big Ten tournament by Penn State. And a lot of people were really high on Princeton. And Maryland took it to them.
Took
So
it
we'll
to
see
him.
what happens in this iteration of the game. Eric Spanos has been terrific for the Maryland Terrapins. It was really interesting after Maryland, quote unquote, struggled against Loyola to win that game in overtime. People were ripping the offense. Slow, unathletic. We need to, and I guess Spencer Ford, the freshman at Maryland, is redshirting. And everybody's like, we need to take the red shirt off of Spencer Ford and he can come in and save the day. And you're just kind of like, it's one game. And he's not any faster than what you already have on the field. No knock on Spencer Ford, a wonderful player, but speed is not his game. Now, there haven't been any, I ain't seen any talk about anybody rescuing Maryland's season on the offensive end following this 11-7 victory over Syracuse. Princeton, we mentioned their moxie going up to Penn State, winning that game in overtime. And boy, you want to talk about a resilient bunch. It was 8-6 at half, Princeton. And in the third quarter, they only scored one goal. So it was 9-6, but they held Penn State scoreless. And the fourth quarter, Penn State outscored Princeton 4-1. It became the Matt Traynor show. He scored three goals, and the last of which was just with over 5 minutes left to go in the game. But then Princeton scores the game winner in overtime. Colin Burns, they did give Nate Kibiri an assist in that one. So I was incorrect saying he had double donuts, but he was still held in check by that Penn State defense. So you bet your bottom dollar that Maryland has got a strong defensive game plan set up. Faceoffs will be critical in this one. Goaltending will be huge. The goaltending for Princeton, not too bad, right? 22 saves
Yeah,
for Ryan Craddock.
Ryan Craddock was awesome.
22 saves.
Really happy
That's
for
pretty
him.
impressive.
Really happy for that kid.
And he's going against Logan McNaney, who has seen it all
Since
since George W. Bush administration been between the
2004.
pipes.
Spoken goal for Maryland.
So good one on tap.
Yeah, great one. Again, you can catch that on ESPN Plus. Great set of games. You can catch all the games
Do
between
like Dan
11,
Flynn,
11
stay
and
out of
1
the
o'clock.
elements and just post up on the couch.
Yeah. Eating some cheese. And that brings me to our give and go this week, Dix. Cheese.
I like cheese.
Good. I'm coaching a basketball team, and you have the ball and you want someone to set a screen or a pick for you. You say cheese. Put your hand up and yell cheese, and that means set a screen. That's the word they chose.
Okay.
So then We were having a discussion about, we have like an inbounds play in youth basketball. The only play you need is a play where you take the ball out under your own basket. If you can just run up, you can score 8 to 10 points a game, which can win you the game if you can just execute a play there. So we have one play, it's just an inbounds play. But if the girl is wide open and she wants to tell her teammate who's passing the ball in that I'm not going to do the cutting that we usually do, they yell cheddar. So then we decide, well, it doesn't. Then they started after practice having some fun with it, saying it could be any cheese. And they started naming all these various cheeses. And it got me thinking, like, what's your favorite cheese? Do you have a ranking of cheese sticks?
Well,
And that's our give-and-go topic for today.
first of
Cheese.
all, when you say the word cheddar, I think of cheese ball, and that is Doug Gray, a teammate of mine at Johns Hopkins, a defenseman. We nicknamed him Cheese Ball, and then it evolved into cheddar. So that was always, whenever you say cheddar, I always think of Doug. If he's listening, how you doing, Cheese Ball? My favorite cheese, I mean, it's easy to say American because that's the most versatile, I think. Okay, this is my, don't give me that look. This is, you asked me.
I didn't
Don't,
even
don't,
think about
don't.
American. I made a list. It wasn't on my list, but
How do you not think of American?
it should be up there. Should
Communist.
be up there. That's the best cheese for grilled cheeses, American
Right.
cheese.
And just if you have just a,
A
like, I
burger.
just feel like making a cheeseburger. Boom. But my favorite cheese for flavor, I love like is it Colby? No, what's the one that has like the little hot peppers in it? Is that a Jack cheese? Monterey Jack?
Monterey
It's not a
Jack.
Colby Jack, or
No,
is it a
Colby
Colby
Jack is
Jack?
milder.
Okay.
Yeah, Monterey Jack is the one that may have like the little jalapenos in it,
Okay, I like
but
Monterey Jack. That's
yeah.
good stuff. I do remember one time I got the spicy grilled or the spicy chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A with that Monterey Jack on top, and I had some problems. So I got to stay away from that combination these days, but I like Monterey Jack. I love brie. I love
Okay.
brie.
Okay.
I do. I'm not afraid to say it.
You like a
I
nice
like
soft
brie.
cheese.
It is.
Yeah.
And also I'm a big fan of goat cheese, on a salad or a spread on a, some vegetables or a cracker or something like that. Those are probably, and again, American cheddar, Swiss, they're all good.
So I'm a ch I go start with cheddar
Okay.
if I'm just having cheese, and the sharper the better. So a sharp New York, sharp Vermont, love an Irish or an English cheddar. Although sometimes it can be a little too, I don't know, chalky. So I like the Vermont or the New York, a sharp New York cheddar is probably my favorite. But to make a good cheese plate, you got to have at least three, and you got to have your sharp, your hard sharp cheese. You got to have your soft cheese. Brie is common. And then you got to have like the stinky cheese. You got to have like a blue type of cheese that are crumbly cheese. But if I was ranking them, underrated cheese is just Parmesan. Throw it in a Caesar salad. And I don't mean like the grated stuff you put on the sprinkly stuff that comes in the Kraft green jar. I mean the actual shaved, throw that in your Caesar. Mozzarella, underrated, but
That's a good call.
it's a staple of a lot of different things that you eat. Feta cheese. Again, these are all names that the kids who were throwing out when they were like just naming cheese in practice, and we were all dying. My daughter threw out mac and cheese, type of cheese that she
Why not?
likes. Gouda, Colby Jack, I think is my kid's
I
favorite.
love Gouda. Gouda tastes so good. Gouda may be, in my experience, the worst melting. You can't melt Gouda on
Yeah.
like a, a sandwich or something. You can't, at least in my, again, my limit, you can't melt it. So you got to kind of put it on a cracker or eat it by itself.
In your opinion, I think we might be in agreement on this because we haven't mentioned it. What's the most overrated cheese in the history of cheese? It's got to be Swiss.
Probably, yeah, probably, but all cheese is good cheese. I mean, let's face it.
But Swiss cheese, whenever you see it in like a cartoon or the giant wheel, it's always a Swiss cheese. And it's the worst. It's the worst cheese. No one likes Swiss cheese. It's
Yeah.
average. It's mild taste. It's yeah.
Yeah,
Get it out of here.
it can be mid
Get it out
for
of here.
sure. Yeah.
That seems like a good place to stop. I'd like to thank our guest again, Owen Duffy, for joining us on the show. Good luck to the Heels this week and throughout the season. A reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by our partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm, specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We're going to be here all season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, and share the love. It is free. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.
On a Crossroads website.